Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
All right, welcome you guys. Welcome, welcome. We are back with the Marty and Laura Show. I'm Laura.
Oh, I'm Marty. I missed my cue.
It's okay. It's all right. It's all good. It's been a long day for both of us, right? So we're really excited you guys are here. We are going to talk today about something that is really startling and really concerning, I think, to both Marty and I. And it's an article that I ran across in a magazine called MoneyWise. And it says that half of America's 87 million pet owners have decided against vet treatment. And it continues that many Americans, the cost of caring for their pets has become unbearable. A Gallup poll found 52% of U.S. pet owners say that they've had to put off veterinary care because of the cost. A whopping 7 in 10 also say they forgo pet care due to financial reasons.
So, that's scary.
Marty, that's a lot, and I feel like it's got a little something for us to dig into. So talk to us about that. I think there's multiple reasons I know about. You talk to me about what you know about.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that we do discuss this because it's startling to me, and
right,
but not unexpected. You know, unfortunately, veterinary costs have gone up, the staff costs have gone up, the cost of drugs right. and pharmaceuticals and vaccines and supplies have gone up. So all those things are concerning, you know, everything, insurance, payroll, everything has increased. So
from your it's definitely end, from the veterinary clinic.
Yeah. Right. And so it's not like veterinarians are like, oh, let's gouge the clients. Let's sure. just go out there and double the fees. And it's certainly not that way. But there's a few things that have played a role in this. And certainly one is the corporatization of veterinary medicine.
That was one I had on my list. Yes.
Yeah. So I think we should talk about that. I think yep. we should talk about the overall cost of pets. It's not just veterinary care, but it's also the overall cost. How much are you spending on your pet food? How much are you spending on your other stuff, doggy daycare?
And some of those things. I mean, the cost of pet food has gone up.
Oh, it has.
The other thing that I thought was a really important thing for us to talk about, it was mentioned kind of briefly in this article, is that veterinarians can do more for pets today. But yes. those machines and those processes and those tests cost more money. So
they do.
So let's kind of run through those items. Let's start with the corporatization, because this is a huge topic. We've touched on it in Pure Dog Talk, mm-hmm. but I really want to deep dive it for this conversation because it feels like it's pretty important.
It is. And, you know, about half of the veterinary clinics now are corporate. And about the other half, that means the other half are still owned by your local small practice owner, your small business owner. So this is something that, in fact, a couple of weeks ago when I was at the AKC delegate meeting, we were talking about just the whole economy of the United States, grocery stores, gas stations, pharmacies, you know, everything has become corporate. And so I was sitting with a couple of
farms,
people and I said, so,
farms, think yeah, about farms. Corporate farming.
Exactly. And I said to them, so when you buy groceries, why do you go to chain of grocery stores? Why don't you go to your local grocery store? That's what I do. I go to my local store that is still owned by a small family group. They own 5 grocery stores now, but it's still family owned. It's not owned by a corporation. So I think you have to decide as a consumer, what exactly is important to you? Where are you going to shop? Where are you going to buy veterinary care? Where are you going for your optometry, your dentistry, your
right.
all of your care? And so I think you really need to take a giant step backwards and say, is this the way I want to spend my money? And are these the places that I want my money to go to? So I don't want to say it's just veterinarians because it's not.
Right.
It's,
no.
It's dentists.
Well,
it's ophthalmologists. It's
thing.
Everything.
I mean, let's talk about reality. Inflation's a thing.
Right.
Right. Everything costs more
it
right
is.
Now. Started right. with COVID and supply chains and blah, 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 blah. And here we are today, tariffs and all the rest of it. So everything costs more.
It does.
And veterinarians are no different. Drugs come from China with all the tariffs on China. I mean, like, this is a thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. So corporatization and where you shop matters.
Like when you go out to dinner, do you go to the chain restaurants? Do you have Uber deliver your food, DoorDash, whatever? I mean, I still grow some of my own food. I still make all my own meals. I don't buy any of that stuff. I eat out very little unless I'm traveling and I don't have too many choices. And I won't go to a chain restaurant. Right. I go to the local little restaurants because A, they're more interesting and they have cool food and I can eat local food that is unusual. Have you ever had Chislic in South Dakota? I mean, like there's little pockets of these really cool kinds of foods that you don't get if you go to the big chains. And I'm not going to mention any because I don't want to bash anyone, but you all know who I mean. Chains.
The Golden Arches are just everywhere, but you don't have to actually eat at them.
No. No, and they're not great. The food is really redundant and it's really not interesting. And so, you know, go on your little app on your phone and find something more interesting and more unique and more local so that you can eat something cool and interesting. And the same goes for veterinary care. You don't have to go to a veterinary clinic that's corporate owned. There are lots of them out there that are, and it doesn't make them bad. It just makes them different. And it means your prices are probably going to be higher. They have protocols that they're required to follow. So if your dog goes in with diarrhea, they have a specific protocol they're supposed to follow. Instead of being able to craft the kind of medicine that is based on what your pet needs are, what your needs are. And in our practice, we have a guarantee. Like our guarantee is that we will provide you a care plan that fits your needs and your pets and your resources. So we don't have to go through an algorithm where we say, these are the things we have to do. If you look at me and say, I can't do that, then we come up with plan B and plan C.
Right. And Marty, talk to us about, there are markets, and you and I have discussed this some, there are markets in which it's almost impossible, if not totally impossible, to find an independent owned vet clinic.
It's a little tricky, and some of them have gotten really good. I hired a doctor from another practice in March, and it was a little tricky to figure out which corporation owned the practice. I had to drill down to terms and conditions. I went through all the websites for Contact Us, all the different tabs in the website before I finally went to terms and conditions and found the veterinary corporation that owned this practice. Because I knew he was going to have a difficult time getting out of his contract because that's the way they write them. They write them to bind you to the corporation.
Okay, so it's that's a little known thing. I don't think people understand, and this is where having Marty here to talk about this on the Marty and Laura show is really important. So it's really hard for veterinarians who come out of school with this huge debt load, right? Student loans, all the rest of it. They need a job. The only jobs that are available are corporate and corporate.
Oh, no.
Well, okay, not the only jobs.
There are many other jobs available, but corporate is appealing for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. One is that they pay a lot of money. Okay. Two is they give you a big signing bonus. And three is they give you some protocols that allow you to, as a new graduate, feel more comfortable in how you're practicing medicine. Because they give you some guidance, but it's beyond guidance. It's right on into dictatorship. And so that's a concern. Mm. And a lot of veterinarians are looking for mentorship and they're looking for enough money to pay back their school loans.
And
honestly, if they pay these big signing bonuses and you start at a practice that has a big signing bonus, and then you don't stay for the entire time, they give you a hard time leaving your contract. They make you pay back the signing bonuses. So the recommendation is that you take that signing bonus and you plunk it into a checking account or a bank account that you can't touch so that if you need it at the end, if you get 6 months into your employment or a year into your employment, you go, no, this isn't working for me. Mm-hmm. You have that money to pay them back because it's not a gift. You owe them that money back if you leave.
Wow.
And that's tough. These kids are coming out of school with $250,000 in loans. That's a lot of money. But there are good practices that are very willing to mentor people, very willing to give them good pay. And give them the opportunity to do their own kind of medicine so that you are not dictated how the medicine gets practiced. And so I think it's important that veterinary students and veterinary graduates understand that that's an important thing. And the fast track, and believe it or not, the fast track to paying back your student loans is to go into a practice that will allow you to become an owner, because ownership will allow you a faster way to pay back your loans. So you're not stuck with 10 years or 15 years or 20 years of loan payment, that you go to the bank. And we were actually conversing about this with my VMG group. Do you go to a big lender? Do you go to your local bank? And in my world, I go to my local bank. Our doctors that are practice owners in our practice have gone to our local bank, gotten a loan, been able to pay it back without doing something again at a big chain, a big corporation. And that way they can fast track their loan repayment because they're making an income that isn't just their salary, but they're also getting benefits from practice ownership. So they can pay their school loans back more effectively. They can be more profitable. There's just a lot of really good advantages. So if you're
owned businesses, I'm just saying, people, employees, businesses, ESOPs.
Yeah.
Exactly. I come from a background in cooperatives and credit unions. I'm saying, okay, so there are options, right? So try, if you're struggling with your veterinary cost, try to track down an independently owned veterinary clinic in your area. Okay, that's number one.
Yes.
Number two
is don't cheat on your veterinary care. Doing preventive care, I know it seems like, oh, I don't really think I need to take my cat to the vet. She never goes outside. Everything is fine. She's healthy. No, if you pay for routine veterinary care, for dogs, you do your preventive vaccines, you do your preventive heartworm and flea and tick, all your stuff in the long run. Yeah, that actually saves you money, because now you don't end up with this big, ginormous disaster of heartworm disease, of Lyme nephritis, of all these things that you could have prevented because you were doing routine care. Does it cost some money? Yes, it does. But if you work with your veterinary professional and you say to them, okay, what's the most cost-effective way for me to do this? We have laboratories that give us special pricing in the spring and summer for doing a fecal, a heartworm test, and a blood panel. We have rebates that you can't get if you buy your stuff at corporate. And I won't mention corporate because you all know who they are. I'm not going to get into any trouble by saying anything, but if you go to your local vet, if you go to your local vet and you say, okay, do you have a rebate? We have rebates on heartworm preventive. We have rebates on flea and tick preventive. We have all kinds of ways that we can do better pricing. And if you establish with a veterinary clinic that's willing to work with you, and they understand you and you understand them, and that relationship is strong, you're actually going to come out ahead.
Well, and I think it's really important. Let's think about preventive care in people versus not. Like, do you get your mammary screening and your prostate screening and your blah, 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 right?
All your stuff. Yep.
Yep. All the stuff. Preventive care is cheaper than treating the disease. So that's one. Yes. Two, I think that, you know, our pets live pretty short lives. I mean, a really old dog is 15, 16 years old. Really old cats, maybe 18, right? So pet insurance is a thing, but keep in mind, it's amortized over a much smaller amount of time. So it can be expensive. Mm-hmm. There are a variety of insurance companies. Many of them do more of like catastrophic insurance. And I think that one of the things that I know I personally recommend is to consider pet insurance. I personally recommend Trupanion, but whatever you like, because you can tell yourself that you're going to put that money in a savings account or you're going to have it on a credit card, but a lot of times you don't. Promise, because I've lived it. So that's a thing. So think about those things in terms of saving money. Go to a local veterinarian, work with your veterinarian, consider pet insurance. And then let's talk about the one that I think is kind of really, really interesting is the explosion in the abilities of veterinarians to treat a variety of really serious diseases that were once a death sentence. But that treatment isn't cheap. So let's talk about that.
Well, what are you asking about?
So let's think about like cancer treatment, right? MRIs, you know, stuff that when I was a kid growing up, we couldn't, it's not a thing, Right.
No, even 25 years ago, my daughter would watch Animal Planet after I'd come home from work. The way our TVs were set up, because we live in the country, she couldn't watch the same things I could watch in the kitchen. I couldn't watch the things she could watch in the bedroom. And she would say to me, "Mom, Mom, come in here. You need to watch this." And I'm like, "Really, I spent 12 hours today being a veterinarian. I don't need to watch it on TV, but thanks." And she'd say, "No, Mom, Mom, come in here. You got to see this. They're doing it wrong." I'm like, "No, honey, it's not necessarily wrong. It's just different." And so, yes, even 25 years ago, we could do some really cool things with ultrasound and MRIs and CTs and all the things that we could do diagnostically. But the question I always have for people is, just because you can, doesn't mean you should. So, okay, so if your dog starts having seizures when they're 14 years old, and the suspicion is that there's some kind of organic brain disease, some kind of maybe a mass in the brain. Okay, so say I send you to the university or to a referral center that can do a CT or an MRI. If they diagnose your dog with a brain tumor, are you going to take the brain tumor out surgically? Are you going to put your dog on chemo or radiation? And if your answer to me is no, then why would we do the diagnostics? If we've taken x-ray of your cat's chest and it's full of fluid, and this is a common thing to see in cats. When I worked at the emergency clinic, if I didn't see one cat every Saturday night with a chest full of fluid, and this was 45 years ago,
Wow.
that was just the norm to have at least one cat. If by 10 o'clock on Saturday night, a cat hadn't come in respiratory distress because of fluid in the chest, I'd go out in front and say, "Okay, who missed the phone call? Like, who didn't realize what was going on when those people called?" And okay, so is there a good reason that your cat has fluid in the chest? And the answer is no. It's heart failure. It's cancer. It's uniformly a fatal disease that has a very poor prognosis, a very short life outcome. Should we? I mean, honestly, should we do those diagnostics, and should we put your pet through those things? And I'm not saying that there aren't some great outcomes, because I'm going to say, see, I have the shirt on. Miracles cost extra. Yes, they do. So there are times that you can have a good outcome, but I'm going to tell you, if your veterinarian walks into the exam room with a piece of paper with lab work or with a chest x-ray or an abdominal x-ray or an abdominal ultrasound, and they say, "This is not good." I mean, that's what you need to ask from the beginning, is there a list of things that could be good, or are they all on the bad list? And if they're all on the bad list, if there's not one thing your vet can think of that could have a good prognosis, be reasonable, be rational. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, you are not reasonable or rational. You're at an emergency clinic. They don't know you. You don't know them. Your pet's in distress. You're spending a bunch of money. So ask two questions. Is there anything that could be good as an outcome? And can you stabilize my pet to get through the night so I can get back to my regular veterinary clinic and have a conversation with him? Because frankly, some of the diagnoses that are made, and they just did this at the Bernese Mountain Dog National, they had a speaker that talked about how many times your pets are diagnosed with hemangiosarcomas, and that's not what they are. What if it's a pyometra and it's something that your vet could treat medically or surgically for a lot less money, for 25% or 50% of what the emergency clinic would charge you? So, can you stabilize my pet? Can we get through the night? Is it reasonable? Is it rational? And can I get out the door for a decent amount of money and go back to the place that they know me, I know them, I love them, they love me, and we can figure out what plan A, plan B, and plan C can be. Now, sometimes there aren't plan Bs and Cs, but many times there are, and many times the emergency clinic slash referral centers don't give you those options because A, they're corporate, and B, that's not how they're trained. They're trained to take you to surgery in the middle of the night or as soon as their surgeon walks in the next morning for $10,000 when your vet may do it for $2,500.
Right. And I think there are instances in which that's a good thing, right? Like our pets need emergency care
Absolutely.
and an emergency. And there's times that it's not. And so those are the tough things. And I think too, I mean, you can speak better to this, but you also work in a really high-staffed facility. A lot of the locally owned veterinary clinics have one vet. Maybe if you're lucky, they have two. And they're booked out 6 weeks. And so when you come in with an emergency at 5 o'clock on Friday night, that means that that veterinarian who's already at a 10-hour day, and the staff, many of which are already at 10-hour days, are now going to be there for 15 hours instead of going to an emergency clinic, which is what they're for.
Right.
So I think
but
there's
they used
a lot
to be
of those things that needs to be in consideration.
Yeah, but the emergency clinics started. I worked at the first privately owned emergency clinic in the country. That was in 1981. And until then, the emergency clinics were owned by groups of veterinarians that said, we can't do this anymore. We're just going to share call. But Jan Kovacic in 1980 decided he was going to start his own privately owned clinic. That was the first one. So this is a business model that's only been around for 45 years. Mm-hmm. And in that amount of time, they went from being, you know, here and there to being lots of places at universities, at private ownership, you know, a lot of really good things. And then corporate happened, and then COVID happened. And when COVID happened, staffing became an issue. Doctors, lay staff, everybody became an issue. And so the business model that veterinarians like us had become reliant on, we're not close to an emergency clinic. We're 45 minutes to an hour away from them, but they were all around us. We could send people, if they live north of us, we'd send them one place. If they send south, southeast, southwest, whatever, we could send them to different places. And so we had a lot of options, and there was no big deal. You'd show up at their door, they'd let you in, they'd triage your case, they'd take care of you, and they would fix it. That doesn't happen anymore. I have clients that have to call four or five. I mean, when we have a cat that comes in with an obstructed bladder, I have my doctors, they're looking at their staff and saying, you call this, you call this, you call this, you call this. They're calling four emergency clinics and seeing if there's anyone that can even take that case. So the business model has shifted, and we're kind of in a pickle because most vet clinics don't do after hours care anymore because they've been relying on this. The staff has become accustomed to it. The doctors have become accustomed to it. And now we're backsliding into a situation where we don't have those options. So it's kind of a problem. Mm-hmm. No, it's a huge problem, not a little problem. It's a big problem.
It's a huge problem, and it takes an enormous toll on the veterinarians and on their staff. Mm-hmm. I see it personally all the time.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
Hi, this is Dr. Marty Greer, and if you've just welcomed a new puppy into your home, you know that potty training can be one of the biggest challenges. Puppies learn best with consistency, and that's where Brilliant Pad Smart Pad comes in. It's the self-cleaning indoor potty that takes the mess and stress out of house training. With Poop AI technology, Brilliant Pad automatically detects waste and replaces soiled pads, so your puppy always has a clean place to go. No more stepping on wet pads or dealing with odors. Plus, the Brilliant Pad app lets you check in anytime from your phone to see if your pup has used the pad, so you can stay on top of their potty schedule even when you're not home. And because your puppy always has 24/7 access to a clean potty area, it makes the transition to a new home easier and reduces accidents. Ready to make potty training simple? Visit brilliantpad.com/MartyLaura and use coupon code BPBMartyLaura50 to save $50 on your Brilliant Pad Smart today.
So we've diagnosed the problems. We're good at that. So solutions. What are
solutions?
Solutions. So preventive care. We talked about one. Pet insurance. Pet health insurance. It's two. Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit in the past, but maybe we can take another 10 minutes or so and talk about ways that you can, as an owner, as an average owner with no veterinary understanding at all, can sort of triage your pet and mm-hmm. say, it's a runny nose. He's not going to die. I can go later, or, you know, right. whatever it is. What can we give people as structure, just really identifiable structure?
Right. So if your pet is limping, but they're bearing weight on a leg, it's not broken. Wait until tomorrow. It's a torn cruciate. It's a soft tissue injury, whatever. Wait until tomorrow. So unfortunately, there are some things that you need to sometimes use good common sense. Mm-hmm. Talk to your friend, talk to your neighbor, talk to your mentor, talk to your breeder, you know, kind of figure out some of that stuff. I hate to say to Google stuff because sometimes it's reliable.
And that's why there's us.
Yeah, but there are a lot of organizations now that have an online presence that, like, we have a 24-hour answering service. Mm-hmm. So if you call our practice, and a lot of practices use these services now that triage cases, you call our practice, you explain to them what's going on. They have a vet tech on the phone that will help you. And there are telemedicine cases that are the similar situation.
You know, I know these popped up during COVID, and you and I talked about it once, maybe not even on a podcast. Talk to me about the telehealth that's available for veterinary medicine. Did it really continue to develop after COVID or no?
Yeah, it has. And I'll tell you, probably the best telemedicine that we have is for poison control. And again, poison control, National Animal Poison Control, pet poisons, they developed, again, 45 years ago, that if your pet eats something that, now, of course, a pair of underwear is different than a gummy, but if your pet eats something and you're not sure if this is a problem or not, you call the National Animal Poison Controller of Pet Poisons, you give them your credit card number, you tell them what your pet is for breed, how big they are, how old they are, all the stuff, how much of something you think they've ingested. They have toxicologists that are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that can look at the, like, we had a dog this week that ate nicotine gum,
like lozenges or gum or something.
Yeah. And it's got xylitol in the coating. So we were concerned about the xylitol. We were concerned about the nicotine. It's a little puppy. It's a young puppy. It's a little bitty thing. But we're on the phone with poison control. The owners were EMTs. So we were able to come up with a treatment plan that wasn't a gajillion dollars, didn't require an emergency clinic visit, all this stuff. So if you have to pay them $60 or $75 to do a consult for poison control, it's a lot cheaper. They can tell you, do I need to make my pet vomit? Should I not make my pet vomit? Because sometimes it's not safe. If it's something that's irritating to the GI tract, or if it's something that may cause a seizure, they're going to tell you, don't make them vomit. So don't just automatically do that. So call poison control, get the information, have the package in your hand when you call, have your credit card number in your other hand. Know this stuff because you may not have to go to the emergency clinic. And if you do, they've developed a treatment plan that tells the veterinary clinic when you walk in the door, what do you need for an antidote? What do you need for fluids? What do you need for all the stuff? So in the long run, you actually do save money. It's $75, but it's a lot cheaper. They may tell you,
in the scheme of things, it's a lot cheaper than a lot of vet bills I've seen.
Right. And people say, well, why do they charge me for poison control? When I call about my kid, it's free. That's not free. It's funded by your government dollars. So get a grip, folks. So it's not really free. It's just how the funds are directed. So call poison control if you need to. Call your veterinary clinic after hours and see what their services are. Call the emergency clinic. So you go to an emergency clinic. If you have to go to one, make sure that if you think your dog needs surgery, they actually have a surgeon there. So when you walk in the door, do you have access to a surgeon? If my pet in a pair of underwear, can you induce vomiting? Can you help me with this? There's a drug called Clevor that's an eye drop that will induce vomiting in your pet. It's much safer than hydrogen peroxide. And if you have a dog that eats socks and underwear and other weird things like gummies and all this stuff as a regular basis, talk to your vet and see, do they have the ability to dispense something like Clevor to you so you have access to that. So after hours, you have plan B. Have your first aid kit book. Have your first aid course. We taught a great first aid course.
Have a whole course that's going to be available. It is available now on Vimeo.
It is.
Be available on a new platform. I think that's a really important point. Know what you can do. You are not helpless. And you don't have to be a veterinarian to know some really basic common sense things. And just the little bit of time that you spend on like our K9911 veterinary emergency class will save you thousands of dollars potentially in the long run.
And talk to your vet. Can you have some pain medication at home? Can you have an antibiotic at home? Not wild amounts that you're going to just willy-nilly be using, but the pet.
Something to get you through a couple days. You know, it's a weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, the medication your pet should have if they run out of meds, if they have diarrhea, if they have nausea, you know, all the things that are common, because dogs like to vomit, dogs like to get diarrhea, dogs like to eat stuff. There's just some things, and you know your pet. So once you know your pet and your vet knows you, this is why you want to have that good relationship with your vet. And this is why showing up every now and then with a couple boxes of pizza or a couple baskets of cookies can go a really long way in having that relationship. And really, it is so important that you have a good relationship with your veterinary clinic. And pick one vet. Don't go hopping around saying, well, I'm going to go over here because it's cheaper for my vaccines. They're not shots, people. We don't shoot dogs. We vaccinate them. And I'm going to go over here for this. I'm going to go over here for that. No. Please don't. I just had a client in that did this on Tuesday, and my staff was rolling their eyes. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe that they think they're going to save money this way, because they're not. It's not cheaper for you to do that. Pick one vet. Pick one vet that knows you. Pick one vet that provides the services that you need at the hours that you need, and stick with them, because that will pay you back in dividends for that relationship. So please think
about— And a bag of tacos. I'm just saying. Tacos are a thing. That's what I pay my vet. When I'm bribing my vet staff, I'm like, tacos. Taco okay, Tuesday.
Do a summer cookout. Do pizza. Do cookies. You don't even have to buy anything expensive. Bake a batch of cookies. Take them in. Have them in a nice little basket. And be nice to everybody on the staff. Start at the front desk and be nice the entire way through the vet practice, because being snarky to the front desk does not improve the relationship you have with your veterinarian. So, you know, think about those things. Pick a veterinarian at your practice that you really get along well with, but don't be only beholden to that veterinarian, because they're not going to work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Go to all the vets at the practice. So again, that they know you, you know them. If you have multiple pets, you may have one in the practice that does really great with cats and one that does better with dogs. So know the resources that you have and have those things all worked out so that it makes sense. You know, just think through, how would you want to be treated if you were the employee at the vet clinic, and be thoughtful about those things.
I guess, you know, the important thing here is we don't want you to not take care of your pets because it costs too much.
Right.
That is like the bottom line here. Bottom line is, we want you to take care of your pets, and we want to help you find ways to do it in a cost-efficient manner.
So, right. So talk to your vet about it. You know, sit down, have a heart-to-heart with them and explain to them the situation. You've had a change in your employment. You've had a change in your lifestyle, something that's happened that may have put you in an awkward position. Have your care credit card or scratch pay or vet billing, or, you know, there's a lot of different resources that are out there. Right. So plan ahead, because catastrophic things happen. So don't be caught off guard by those things. Be prepared so that if something does happen, you know how to navigate through it, because nobody makes good decisions at 2 o'clock in the morning. We just talked about this today. I was at the dog show, and one of my very, very, very dear clients was there, and we were talking about, no one makes good decisions at 2 in the morning. They talk you into things that you maybe are going to regret later. If your pet has a serious health concern, maybe they have cancer and they're at end of life. Mm-hmm. I sit down with my clients and talk to them and say, okay, if this happens, if XYZ happens, fluid builds up in the chest, fluid builds up in the abdomen, whatever, I want you to know.
People, we have DNRs for people.
Exactly.
I mean, why wouldn't you give the same courtesy to your pet? Like I always say, I wish we could give to people the same courtesy we give our pets, right? Like,
right.
Don't make them live through this horrible thing. But everybody has to make their own choice for themselves and their pet. And I really do think that just a little bit of planning will make it so that your pet doesn't have to suffer from a lack of veterinary care. And saving our pet suffering is basically the bottom line that we're trying to accomplish.
Right. So talk to your veterinarian if you have a serious illness and say, okay, what are the likely consequences? What do I do? So that if at 2 o'clock in the morning you end up at the emergency clinic, you walk through the door and you say, I want euthanasia. I do not want diagnostics. I do not want heroics. I don't want those things. There's a really nice book written by Claire Chu called Promises to My Pet. It's $6 on Amazon. Buy it, have it ready to go, have a plan for your pet so that if something like that catastrophic happens, you know what you're going to make decisions about so that you're not in that situation that they say to you, well, what if we just do this? And how about we do that? And then $5,000 or $10,000 later, you realize you made a mistake because at 2 a.m. you weren't making good decisions. So have those thought processes, work them out with your veterinarian, have a good relationship. Don't go in once every 3 years to your vet for a rabies vaccination. Have a relationship so that you understand all the things that are happening. Honestly, you may think it costs you money up front, but in the long run, it will absolutely be a godsend for you and your pet.
Preventive care, always the best option. And, you know, let's do what's best for our pets. I think that's basic.
We owe it to them.
Figure it out. And that doesn't have to mean mortgaging your house for the third time. So,
no, you know, be thoughtful about it because your vet and your vet professionals, they're really good people. They want to help you. So have a strategy in mind. It's always going to be best to have a strategy.
Excellent. All right. Well, Marty, I know it's late there. You've had a long day. So
it's just a dog show.
It's just I appreciate your time, my friend. We will talk to you again soon. Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog. And we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.